Happy birthday to the, I can't remember the names, Robert, Kurt, did good, what was the other one? I am Mary Campbell, an alcoholic, who is very grateful to be here. There's so many people that I know and love, and to share with you what has worked for me for a long time. The young people, that does, I was practically the youngest one when I went in. I went in AA in 1939 in New York. That's when, but I went, first off, I will qualify myself as born and raised right in Atlanta, Georgia. I had three brothers and was educated in Atlanta. Married in, when I was 20 in Atlanta. Started drinking when I was 16. Bootleggers, I was doing prohibition, all the things that went with it. I didn't miss a lick. There's no need in going into details, people. It's hard to know or how to tell how you had to sneak around. I said, I still remember one of my, the bootlegger's numbers was Walnut 6789. You know, so funny how those things will stick with you. You'd call them bootlegger, and then you'd stand on the corner and wait till he drove by, and you'd get in the car, and they'd change money and booze, and then they'd ride around the block again, and you'd get out. And booze at that time wasn't that good either. Bad. I started drinking it. It had just charcoal in it. I used to meet Asta on the weekends at different boys' apartments. It used to be the Pershing Point apartments and Stratford Arms apartments. They're all gone now. Most of them. And I said, this was a... I was raised in the Methodist Church, Grace Methodist, right in Atlanta. And we went to church and Sunday school just like we went to school. You never thought about, well, I'm not going. But as you grow older and you start drinking, I had a wonderful Sunday school teacher. And I had a good, I said, we just got it and went, never thought about not going. But then I started drinking in 16. You don't go to a Sunday school and church as often. You start having a guilty conscience because you have been taught to, that that's wicked, that's evil. But we were breaking the law, and that was fun. Thought so at that time. And thought we were having fun. I married, and my first husband I married, met drinking. He was drunk when I married him. And I wondered why, because I knew he didn't really want to be. I was just 20, and he was 30. And he, of course, thought he taught me to wait. Thought he married me to raise me, but he didn't. I could drink just as much as he did and started drinking his liquor, and then he didn't like that. But it was the depression came along about that time, and we had moved to New York. My whole family moved to New York, my brothers and my mother and father. And I married in 20, and when I was 20, and that was in 31. I try to keep, I wrote down the decades that I have lived so long to try to remember what did happen and not just drag it all out. I've never really gone into the details of the drinking that I did in Atlanta. I said to this day I still have a kind of a shameful feeling about it that my first husband, when I met him, I was just 18, and I have what you call today a relationship. I was ashamed of that. And we went in and out of, he had kept a motel, room in the motel. And I was always so afraid somebody would see me. No doubt did, but I never knew it. But I felt that they did. And, I was very glad that, when we finally married, he was an insurance man and he had been out of town, and it didn't stop my drinking. I had a crowd that I drank with and a crowd that I went to Sunday school with and hoped that they didn't meet. And that's the way it was. My family never did drink. My mother and father didn't drink. Because later my father said had he ever started drinking, he would have been an alcoholic in 6 weeks' time. So the overdue, we get it down the line. But when I finally married my first husband, he was late. Dean Dilby's home. I was supposed to have been there at 8, got there at 11. I was not drinking, but he was very high. And I said, I knew really in his heart he did not want to be that way. And I wondered why, with the liquor, and why I drank as I did. I never did drink to just have fun. I drank to get drunk and do things that I wouldn't do when I was sober. And because I didn't have the guts enough to do that. And I think that's true of most women to begin with. And then you get brave when you drink enough liquor. And I did. We moved to New York, and my daughter was born there 9 months and 2 days after I was married. And I said, had it not been for my daughter, I would never have stayed married. I don't know. That's just something you guess. But it was during the Depression, and my husband did not have a job. And she was born, and he finally did get a job in Toledo, Ohio, to manage an insurance company in a real estate office. Well, we moved to Toledo. And during that time, that year, there wasn't any drinking because there was absolutely no money. The only person that had money was my brother. Then he sold paper on commission. My other three brothers, one was a soda jerk in a hotel, and the other one was a page in a bank. At least you could get a job in New York, then you couldn't get one in Atlanta at that time. And my father lost his job, it tickles me today when people talk about they can't do this and they can't do that. It's amazing what you can do when you've got the grace of God and He helps you out. We lived in a third floor walk up with a living room that my mother and my youngest brother slept in. My brother and his wife had one bedroom, the only decent bedroom. And my husband and I slept on the three quarter bed in a little tiny room. There were six people in that. There's two bedrooms and that one living room, kitchen, and a bathroom that went in Queens, Long Island, New York. My folks lived in Brooklyn later, and I loved Brooklyn when they did. And so we moved to Toledo, and after he'd gotten established a little bit, he started bringing liquor home, and I could start drinking it again and watering it. So he quit bringing it home. And I had a hard time getting liquor because being an alcoholic that he was, he did not give me any money. Dollar a day, maybe, if I asked for it. It was just a miserable way of living. And I used to have a neighbor that would give me money. I've forgotten how it worked, but anyhow, I'd get money from her, and that way I could buy liquor. And sell a few things. But I didn't know about hot shops and that sort of thing in Toledo. I did in Atlanta. Because I'd hocked my watch and other things from during the Depression, had to. And so I'd gone back and forth to New York. My parents always paid my way to visit them. They're still living in New York. And we finally, in 1939, we had bought a home and had it completely house cleaned. And I knew I was going crazy because I couldn't get the liquor I wanted. I had everything, but I didn't know why I was not satisfied, what it was that I was missing. And I thought that it was because I couldn't live the life that I'd like to have lived, drinking. And so I told my husband that I was going to go visit my people. He said, oh, we'll go and do that and then go down to visit his mother in Florida for a couple of days, and I said, that's not, I didn't want any part of him. I was 29, I said, I can't make life go, keep on living this way. Parted, not getting there, and he was coming home practically every night drunk. So, he had given me a diamond wristwatch, and during our marriage, we had gone to, I thought about that the other day. I said, when you try to put it all together, it's very hard when you've lived so long. And he When I talk about living so long, I will be 81 years old the 6th of June. And I said I was going to do like the Marty Mann did. She said, I went into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939, and that's when I went in, too. But I'll catch that on. But we had, at one time, my husband was a World War I veteran, and he had won a trip to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. That's where one place that I really had could drink and just morning, noon, and nighttime, too, and was half. One morning, woke up, couldn't move. Just stoned. Had from that, we'd go swimming and then start all over again. And I said, I had really never gone in and talk about how my drinking, because it still kind of hurts and you hate to even think about it. Even today, and it's been a long time. But in 39, I hocked my wristwatch. I found out, I went to a money loan place and got money enough to go catch a bus and take my daughter when she got out of school, and wrote my husband a note and said I want a divorce and bought a pint of liquor. Had enough money to do that. My family had given me money, a little bit. I'd saved it up. So caught the bus. My father met us at the bus in New York. I said, took the pint of liquor, and I don't think I took but a couple of drinks because I didn't want to not be responsible with my daughter. Hadn't gotten to that point yet. So my father, when he met me, said, well, we found the answer to Shelley, that was my oldest brother's drinking. He had heard Morgan Ryan talk on radio. They didn't have TV but in 39. And he said that was the answer. They had been to one or two meetings. So I said, that was great, but I was going to New York to get drunk and run around and have a good time. I didn't want any part of that. I had no idea that the drinking was the root of my problem. And that's what today I should just remember, just don't take that first drink. It took me a long time to really know that that's the one that starts you, is the first one. We don't have to. When we do that, we might as well just kiss it goodbye. My dear was with me. What I share what's worked for me. And that's, I hope by, this was how in the meetings, I went to my first meeting, I was telling, Frank? No, not Frank, what's your name? Ralph. Tonight, and his birthday is June the 6th too. I found out that my first meeting was June the 6th, 1939. It was in an empty apartment in New York City. And there were just a few, and the young man, good gracious, there couldn't have been over 30 people there, that many. There's his mothers and daddies and the alcoholics. And my brother and his wife. And the young man that spoke, he said, by speaking and sharing what I'm sharing with you, I get help from it, and I hope that it helps you too. And I always think about that in sharing, because we're not trying to tell people what to do. We're only sharing what has worked for us. And this program has been a way of life, a way of living, every day, one day at a time. It has been for me for quite a while. Been plenty of ups and downs to go. But anyhow, that first meeting, Bill Wilson was there, and Lois, and Fitz Mayo was, he was our southern friend in the big book. And I knew quite a few of them. I didn't some of them. You meet them and know them because my mother and father were very... I was still married, and they thought, well, they didn't know that I had come to, I didn't tell them I'd come there to get drunk and run around, because you just didn't do that. You just did it, sneaked and lied like I've been used to, because when I came to the program, I knew that there was no way of ever getting forgiven for all the lies I had told. They were, to try to straighten that out, the only good Lord could do that. And I didn't think even he could do it. Because when you're sneaking and lying and you're all the way in it, particularly in Atlanta, and I don't believe to this day, had I tried to recover in Atlanta, that I'd have made it. Because nobody up there knew me. They didn't know the good part about me. I was cussing, and I was talking about sex, all the things I had never done. They said, ooh. And they were not sponsors, so per se. But Fitz Mayo was mine. Because I told him everything that had happened before, how I had been pregnant 6 times in 7 years and had one to show for it, my daughter, and how I'd wanted a big family, and it just wasn't meant to be. And he said to me just very plainly, well, don't you realize you just weren't supposed to have them? And he was the kind of person that you knew that when he said that, that was true. And that's what I just accepted it. And then about 15 years later, I realized that I'd been lying to myself all along, that I really didn't want the children with that husband. So after you get honest with yourself, it takes a long time to get some of it out. You don't really, I guess God just doesn't give it to you at the time. You can't talk about it. But anyhow, in that summer, I was told to talk about that summer more than about my personal recovery. Jim McCarthy told me that. He heard me talk at Ridgeview, and he said, I said, what can I do? And he said, talk about more about the time you were there with Bill and what you did and so forth. Well, I worked all of the steps that summer because I wanted, so I found the big book came out, and my father bought 4 or 5. He never did buy one of anything. And I started reading the big book with the idea that I could help my brother. Put that up a little high, not to lean over so high. But I started reading the big book, and I realized that that was me. And when I told them that, they said, oh, no, no, you never did. They didn't know what I was thinking. And they never were around me when I really, well, they'd seen me drunk. But just once in a while. But they hadn't lived around me until later, and what I was drinking and how I, at one time, my husband used to go to Detroit from Toledo, and I'd always try to get drunk when he was gone. And I did one time, and he came home. He didn't go, and he came home sober. And I went to the window and screamed, he'd hurt me. He never laid a finger on me. But guilt got me. And I knew the neighbors would call. The neighbors called the police. And he said, just go on upstairs, because he was sober. But that's just a few of the little things that do happen along the way when you're a drunk. And I am a drunk, too. Glad to, and some people, it always amazed me. See, people, alcoholic, I don't want to be called an alcoholic. I was glad to be called alcoholic rather than drunk and a few other choice words that had been. it was a beautiful word to me to find out what was really wrong, because I had gone from the Methodist church to the Episcopal church, and I didn't find what I was looking for. I didn't find people who were living what they were talking about. It's just words, Sunday words. And I was the same. I was just as guilty as they were. But of course, you can always find somebody else's fault other than your own. And that started going to meetings. They only had one a week. And at that time, they met in a vacant apartment to begin with. And then they met in Bert Taylor's tailoring shop. And we sat on the benches where they cut out the suits and things. And it was real, real interesting. And at that time, they said, if you don't have the money for subway fare, which was a nickel then, take it out when they passed the hat. And then people just put in quarters then, if they had them. Not everybody had them. Most of them didn't have jobs. My brother got drunk. And several of the men came out to Brooklyn to be with him all day long because they weren't working. I went over there. My father and mother lived across the street. And I just soaked up all the listening that I could, what had worked for them. And there were some dandy stories. One young man had been a reporter with Eleanor Roosevelt. He had a broken leg. So I had fallen down the steps. Another one had stolen the brass doors off the cemetery and hocked them to get liquor. There were all kinds of stories that you say, well, I didn't do that. But I was alcoholic enough to suit me. I thought to myself, when they tried to tell me that I was not an alcoholic, then I would try to tell them all the rottenness I had done. And you know, tried to prove it. But you don't have to prove anything. If in your heart you know that you are, you don't have to prove it to anybody. The only way you can prove it is just by living it down one day at a time. That's what I still try to do. It's so that summer, Bill saw that I was a cute trick. I had a nice figure, looked pretty good, and my family accused me of looking for a man. I said, no, I wasn't looking for a man. I found two. Not one, but two. And I've always liked men. I always have. I had three brothers, no sisters. And I had good rapport with them. And could tell them things, because it seemed to me that, as I said, not having a sister and not being really close to my mother, I had my youngest brother who was an alcoholic. My youngest and my oldest brothers were alcoholic. And three out of four of us were alcoholics. And Bill saw that I was causing problems. I didn't do it. My mother and father went to the meetings with me. They didn't trust me. And Bill saw to it that Marty Mann was going to the meetings, and she was still in the sanitarium up in Kalispell, Connecticut, in the Blythewood Sanitarium. And he got Marty to ask me to come up and spend the day with her, because she was fairly new in the program at that time, too. She went in 39. And I went up and went on the train up, spent the day with her. It was just like a country club. She'd been there for nearly a year. Beautiful spot up in the Blythewood Sanitarium. I don't know if it's still there or not. But it doesn't matter. And I met all these people who were recovering there. And that night they had a meeting. And Bill and Lois and all the different ones had come up. And in the beginning, I had told my mother after I'd talked with her. I tried to talk with her. And she said, it was given to me, except you become his little children. And I thought, well, that's so true. And I was so willing to swallow the whole program, hook, line, and sinker. I hadn't found a way of life before. I say today that it was God leading me all the way, because I found the God of my understanding in the Alcoholics Anonymous program that I'd never found before, by people, by working this program one day at a time, the steps. You don't have to try to work them. Read them. Read them as they are in order and do them to the best of your ability. Nobody's perfect when it comes to working them. Never will be. I don't proclaim anything like that today. But you have so much better way of living. Well, anyhow, I spent that day with Marty. And I had always regretted the fact that I did not have a college education. But after that, I said, well, thank you, God. I'm glad I didn't have all that college education and stuff to get rid of before I could become simple enough to accept this program as it is and not argue with it. Just accept it or try to analyze it. There were people there that could tell that Bill was there too. He did most of the talking, and they only talked a half an hour, and then they'd ask questions of Bill or whoever, Fitz Mayo and this Morgan Ron. They're all in the Get Those Alcoholics Anonymous, comes of age, different ones. And I said, not only that, I said, I spent the night with one of them, something I'd never done sober before. And it wasn't just sex, but he was so enthused over the whole program. But you just don't continue if you want to straighten your life out. I didn't. I said, I can share this because I've had a relationship, and I've had not had many. So when I went to find my, all that summer, that meeting summer, different people's homes, they came out to Long Island and spent the night, a whole bunch of them, after my brother got sober enough. They stayed with him and helped him. His wife had to work because he couldn't. And he had a son that is, today is just still here. And I've talked to him just recently. I'm just getting off the subject completely here. But he said, I met somebody in Virginia Beach that knows you. And I said, who? He said, I told him that I had an aunt in Atlanta, because he had spoken about being in AA. They were at the Pat Robinson thing. And I said, who? He said, well, I told him. I said, ask him if he knew Mary Ivy. He said, no, I don't know Mary Ivy. He said, and you went to look up my phone number, and he said, oh, I mean Mary Campbell. He said, this was a man that had given me the trip when I was 80 years old to Seattle for the International Convention. It was fantastic. I said, small world. And that was a son of the brother that I went in to get help for in AA. What goes around comes around. It happened so that way. But anyhow, I was with the group, and I said, all that summer, as much as I could. I thought I was in... when I took my fifth step, my way of thinking was, all my life, I've tried to make a good impression. Now I'll make a bad one. I went to the fellow that I liked the most and told him all the rottenness. And he said, that is nothing. My stuff was just not anything compared to what he knew, so the stories that were told. And but my husband came in the fall, in August. I told him I wanted a divorce. And he asked me if he could take my daughter to Hartford, Connecticut for the day. And I'd let him, because she was just as much his as she was mine. He took her and flew her to Detroit to his brother. I didn't know where she was for 2 days. Having worked the program and knowing that I didn't know what was best for her either, my family knew I was crazy, said so. And the idea, and I told them all about the affair I'd had. Told my husband, same thing. And that was wrong, because I didn't pay attention to the ninth step. For when to do so would hurt them or others. You don't do that. I did, because I was only thinking about anybody but myself. I wanted to stay in New York and help women alcoholics. There wasn't anybody to do that at that time. Marty was still in the sanitarium, and the few that we had come in, they didn't stay. I took one home with me one time, and Hazel, I'll never forget anything. She did real bright and cheery. Every time she had to go to the bathroom, took a pocketbook with her. She, before the evening was over, she was pretty drunk. So you think you learn. I said, you have to love them, and you don't have to like some of their ways, but you don't have to take them home unless you really know what you're doing. In the beginning, you don't. Everybody is so enthused over it, and that's what we did. My brother took one home, and he was living in Brooklyn then, and he was drunk. And he took a drunk home with him, and he woke up, there's a bundle of clothes right in the floor, dirty clothes. Man, he just taken a shower, gone on, dressed up in his clothes and gone. But you have all kind of funny things like that happen. You have to kind of try to get going ahead of myself. So it's so easy jumping around. After, you know, I wrote that those decades down, so I would try to remember. But when my husband and my family, of course, would not keep me when my husband came there, because he had taken my daughter and flown her to Detroit. And I said, well, I didn't know what was best for her either. Well, they knew I was crazy. So I had to go back with him, and we went to Detroit and picked up my daughter. And she didn't really want to come, because she loved the aunt and uncle there, and they did her and would like to have kept her. But she did. She came back. So I went back to Toledo, and I thought, well, you know, I've learned to know the Lord through this program, the AA program. I said, I'm just going to, talking to myself. And I said, but I'll go to communion, and I said, I'll be struck like Paul was. Thinking all these things, went communion, nothing. So it just it doesn't happen that way. We work these steps, and we know that God works in His own good time, one day at a time. And a God of my understanding, one that I love, and you can call Him. And that was a thing I thought was so fantastic in this program. You can call the higher power, whatever you want to call a power greater than yourself. That is your privilege. Until, as I said, I found I would choose to call Him God. I never thank God I didn't. There were times, and just I was dealing with a girl the other day who had never seen reject God, but because she didn't get what she thought, she was at that point of rejecting. So we did all get there. None of us changed that way. Well, I went back and I didn't, with nothing. And so I made my husband sue me for divorce. I really wanted to work with alcoholic women. I left my daughter with him. And God don't leave you. Not knowing. Because I had left her with a practical nurse. And I hoped that her father would stay sober. I don't know whether he did or not. But I made him give me money. When I got there, made him sue me for divorce. Because I feel, and I still feel that way, that a man deserves a child as much as a mother, if they are worthy. And he had not been worthy, but I could. It was good in him. And I had to try everything, because I tried several things to get. In my heart, I couldn't let it go, because I felt as guilty as he had felt, as I knew that he had. He had had 5 jobs in 11 years, and had them. Every time it was a boost up. As I said, he was a great insurance man, casualty insurance man. My knees are bothering me. I'm sure I need them. So I had money in my pocket. Made him give it to me. Never had it before. And my father met me at the train because he'd been calling, telling him I was going to meet a man. I let him think so. What difference did it make? I wasn't going to. Because when you're looking for God, you're not looking for a man. And I was looking for a God of my understanding. And my father said, "Well, Daddy, you're going home with me." I said, "No, I'm not, Daddy." He said, "Well, if you don't, I'm going to call a policeman." And I just laughed. I said, I had money in my pocket. I said, "Go ahead." I was sober. He couldn't do anything about it. So he helped me find a place in New York. I stayed in New York alone. For a week, by the time the money's running out, and I saw my father practice every day, and I went to one meeting, the one that we had in Carnegie Hall, and but the night before I had gone back, as I said, I had was rejected in AA because I had done so much lip service again. I shouldn't have done so much talking. I shouldn't have, but. I went home, and I went to one meeting, but with this elderly woman, a friend of mine's mother. But I had gone to first when I got there the next day. I went to a place that I knew where Bill and the ones met for lunch, and Bill wasn't there, and Bert Taylor came out and he said, "Well, I know who you want to see." And they called the fellow that I had spent the night with, and I didn't want to see him. I said, just when I was looking, trying to get my life straightened out, and that when you continue to do that kind of thing, if I'm straightening out, I'd done enough of that and drinking. And so I didn't want to do that kind of thing. I did, but I didn't. That's what it amounts to. Because none of us are saints where that's concerned. Never have been. But, I went home, and on Thanksgiving, it's 6 weeks I stayed with my parents, and I was saying I wanted to, I would visit just churches. I didn't go to AA because my family were all against it because of the things I had told them, and my brother didn't accept it because he couldn't put the program in his business. So I went back. When the divorce was coming up, I went back, and my father said, "Daughter, you've punished yourself enough. Go out there and get your daughter. I don't care what you have to do, because she's been my life." And so I did. And I was on Thanksgiving. I had people that lived, neighbors that were friends that I went to stay with, just 2 blocks away from where I lived. And I went to the door and said, "I wanted to see Jackie." And this practical nurse I'd left by. She said, I don't think Mr. LaMille let you come in. I said, I just did then. He came to the door and he said, well, I wouldn't let you in if your father had been calling all day. And I said, listen, you son of a bitch, I'd skin you out of town right now and you know it. Don't do me any favors. I walked in the house and I stayed 4 more years. Because you have to straighten your life out. People didn't understand. They didn't know. I didn't tell them what I was doing. I never hesitated to tell people I was in AA because there wasn't any AA then, and no meetings in Toledo at that time. It was started in Akron, of course, but I've never been to Akron. And I fortunately had a young minister at the church, the Episcopal Church, and he read the big book, and he said, well, Mary, there's 12 steps of the basis of religion. I said, too rotten bad, the church can't give them to you that way. And he said, well, you've been alone too much. You could have been good friends with any girl in your group. Because I went to church group, and all that good stuff, but they didn't think like I did, and they didn't drink like I did. But I figured I'd owe that to my daughter to take her. So I said, this is what decade now? And so after the 39, my husband started picking on my daughter in ways I didn't like, and I figured it was time to get out. And I sent her to East. See, there were no meetings in Toledo. I think they had just started up, but even if they had been, I couldn't go, being there. But I never lost sight and read the big book every day and all that good stuff, because that's to me, it still is a way of life. Not something to talk about and say, I worked this step, I worked that step. It's something to turn over to God every morning and thank Him at night. That's what I try to do. I don't always, there are no saints in the program yet. There will be. But then we strive for that maybe. And I sued my husband for divorce. And sent my daughter East first with a friend of mine's mother, because I didn't want her to have to hear all the stuff. Because he'd been coming home every night drunk. And I locked him out. My next door neighbor, I told my next door neighbor what I was doing, because he'd walk all the way around the house. So I knew he wouldn't break in, because anything he'd bought, he wouldn't break out. So I told him the next day that I had what I had done. And I lived in, he went all around the house, but he couldn't get in, and called the next day and said, I told him I'd sent Jackie East. And he said, well, you didn't have to do that. I said, well, I thought I did. So I went East with my daughter, and I made him give me a separation agreement. Had he lived up to it, I would have gone back. But he didn't live up to it, so I went back and filed for divorce. Because school time. I lived with my mother out in the country in Long Island. And Jackie started school there. And then it was during the war. My mother's, one of her best friend's sons were farming for her. His mother made him do it to get out of the army. And she told him, if you don't do it, I'll go down to Washington and get you out. Because she had one in the army and she didn't want him to be. Well, anyhow, I'd known him when he was a baby. I was 3 years older. Well, he fell in love with me. Somebody told me that. And he was very kind and good to Jackie. He was a fine man. And so I married him. And we had a little boy, 6 and a half month baby. God blessed us with him for 13 years. He was killed in a railroad trestle right here in Atlanta. After we'd moved back to Atlanta. Like I said, I'm going to cut this short because it's not in that much time, because I've lived so long. I've only gotten up to 39 in here, Eddie. I just have to skip around, hit the highlights, and know that how much it has meant to me to be in this program. I couldn't see in those 5 years. Well, the final papers were stopped. And we had to go to the post office to get our mail.
And I went to the post office, and I told my lawyer, I said, if I never get those final papers, that's it, I'm divorced. I don't care what they get. But I did get them. And I didn't do a thing but stop at the bar on the way home, Janice's bar, and lined up the drinks and drank them. And with me and the other truck drivers, and we, and I looked down that bar, and there sat the man I was to marry in the future. And I fell apart, of course. He said, I said, I can't drive home. He said, oh, yes, you can. You drove here. You'll drive home. And he was that kind of person. That's what I needed. Somebody that, he drank beer up till he died. And it, but it's one of those things. My brother that I went in to help get help died at 41, an alcoholic. They gave him a shot to straighten him out, and that was it. He'd had many others. So you never know, and it always worries me to see young people go back out, because you don't know whether that's going to be your last one or not. And it hurts to see it, because he never dreamed that he would, that would be his last one. And then my youngest brother was in the program 8 years before he died. He didn't believe women should be in AA. He thought he would object to it. And I can understand that. But I said, through the years, it has been such a, I've kept the NABA club, and after my son was killed on the trestle right away on Piedmont, my husband was with him, and I filled my life full of AA. From then on, I think about that time I met you, Phil, wasn't it? Long about that time. We've known each other a long time. It has been such a beautiful way of living. And I said that when I got 72, I wasn't going to go back to AA because I was too old. The people wouldn't pay attention to what I had to say. My daughter told me, said, Mama, go back because the boys listen to you. I have 3 grandsons that belong in the program, but I haven't made it yet. They will. One took a white chip, but that didn't mean anything. His wife wouldn't let him go to meetings. So I have 5 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren. And I said, I don't get to see them. My family is in this right here, and I have 1 grandson, a grandson. You all know Kurt knows him very well. When he was youngster, he said, asked me to be his sponsor. I said, honey, I can't be your sponsor. I'll be your grandma. And I've been his grandma ever since. And he has 7 years now. It's wonderful to see him. And he's grown so beautifully. And there's just so many things to, I need all of you to be a grandma too. And it's with this, by the grace of God. And I learned to get to know, the more you know who, higher power, who I choose to call God. I have to, it's meant so much to me. And it's worked so well, in physically, mentally, and otherwise, because I had, when I wasn't going to go back to AA, I got sick. I started telling God what I was going to do. And I got sick. He said, nah, that's none of it. And I was too fat. I wouldn't diet. I got, couldn't eat, lost 40 pounds, and found out I had diabetes. And I needed that, and I went back to AA, and I started back in the Biscayne room. Talk loud. I thought I couldn't stand up. It just shows you what God can do when you just run in your mouth. But it's been so good to me. I kept the NABA club, and for 5 months, one time after my son was killed, my husband, we couldn't get together. But it all worked out. My husband died. I found him on the bathroom floor, had a heart attack, and was gone. We were married 33 years, my second husband. And I thought, you know, it's a good thing I wouldn't be here, because I would have been a complete invalid had he lived. He waited on me hand and foot, and I took it. So now I have to do it for myself. My daughter is smart enough to know that I should live alone. And I have for 12, 13 years now. And I'm very thankful for it. And I thank each and every one of you for being here. It looks so good to see you. I love you. Happy birthday.